Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 5th of March, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Carl Sterrett, CEO and founder of Shield Therapeutics. STX is the ticker there, and Carl explains the significance of the latest positive results received on its lead product, Ferrocrew. Also on the podcast, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR, talks about the option agreement they've entered into for the Copper Gold Eureka project in Zambia. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Cadence, Audioboom, and Europa Metals. We also talk about some funds, because I've been quite into funds of late, looking at funds. I'll discuss the funds we're in and the funds we're looking at. Lots of fun time with funds. And as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. These are on the front page, by the way, of Vox Markets, where there's lots of other content. In fact, Zach is there doing a video on charting there, a couple of stocks he's covering. There's also the morning view from SP Angel, and they're talking about that copper has traded higher on China fiscal stimulus. There's also quite a few bits in there about EVs in this country, hoping to boost the automobile market in the UK. There's an article on Minds and Machines, diversified gas and oil, and plenty of other stuff there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Carl Sterrett, Chief Executive Officer and founder of Shield Therapeutics. STX is a ticker there. Carl, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And I know we've got to get through this because you are actually sitting, you know, thanks for taking the time out. You're sitting on a plane ready to take off. So it's nice you take the time out. So first and foremost, before we get into some positive news, and it is positive results on Ferrocrew, give us a brief summary. What you're all about, please, Carl.
So Shield Therapeutics, we're a specialty pharma company listed on the London Stock Exchange on AIM, ticker STX. And we have a lead product called Ferrocrew, which is approved for the treatment of iron deficiency in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. And at the moment, you are commercializing that, and you signed an excellent partner to sort of get that out there. And and yesterday you've had more results. So what are these results, the positive results you've had on the studio?
Yes. Yeah, actually really great news. So we had a study that we've been running for a couple of years, which is comparing Ferrocrew to the leading product in the market. So it's an IV product called Ferinject. Mm-hmm. Sales last year of about 850 million Swiss francs. Mm-hmm. And there's a general perception that IV ions work better than oral ions. And clearly Ferrocrew is different because we have shown that Ferrocrew is at least as good as this leading IV iron product in a randomized controlled clinical trial.
Excellent. And what is its significance of this? Because obviously you are at the moment commercializing this, aren't you? So you are selling this anyway. So why is this so significant?
I think a number of reasons. I think for the company, it should lead to increased sales through our partners. It should be, you know, they've got more, their sales reps have got more ammunition to discuss the value of the product. And if you think about the patients and the prescriber's position, currently, patients who cannot tolerate all of the existing oral products really have had to be using intravenous iron, which requires them to go to hospital. It's inconvenient, it's expensive, there's additional administration costs, and it comes with a risk of iron overload, but also potentially the risk of anaphylaxis through a hypersensitivity reaction to the IV iron. Now, they have data that proves that they, you know, in this patient group, it proves that there is an oral therapy that works just as well as that IV, and it's much more convenient, doesn't require you to go to hospital. So I think it's a really fundamental piece of news.
Absolutely. And at the moment, how are sales going? Obviously, you can't reveal figures, but I mean, is it looking good at the moment?
Well, our partners are very excited. The deal we did with Norgine towards the end of last year, their sales reps are now on the road. I think it's very early days. We've got to give them a chance to really get on with their activities and get to know all the customers. But they're very, very excited. And of course, this news has only amplified that excitement. And of course, as part of the licensing deal, there's a €2.5 million milestone payment to us, which is nice to have with this news. But really, the big thing here is that the IV iron market is about $1.7 billion a year. And we've got evidence now that Ferracru is just as good as the IV products.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, before the air stewards tell you to do your seatbelt up and switch your phone off, Carl, give us three reasons why anyone listening right now should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. Well, I think this is the third phase 3 study that has really confirmed the effectiveness of Ferracru. So really all the development risk is done and dusted. And it's an enormous opportunity. The whole of the iron deficiency with or without anemia market is enormous and growing at around 9% a year. So it's a great opportunity. And as I've said before, I think recently there's been a significant disconnect between the valuation of the company and the value of the company and its assets. So I think it's there for people to see now.
Excellent stuff. And also, you know, you've got a hardworking CEO and founder who doesn't stop giving it the big sell, even when you're about to take off. That's hard work right up to the last moment. Carl, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. XTR is the ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, we haven't spoken for a while, but you've been keeping busy by the looks of it. You've announced an option agreement for the Eureka Copper Gold Project in Zambia. We'll get into the details of that in a bit. Colin, as we do as always, for people not familiar with Extract, can you summarise what the business is about, please?
Well, Extract was a focused business in Mozambique, particularly in the Manica region. With a view to, you know, currently producing alluvials, with a view to establishing an hard rock operation, which against about 1.4 million ounces, but an initial mine of about 300,000 ounces, which would be producing 35,000 ounces a year. And of late, we've acquired two new iron ore, copper gold, iron oxide, copper gold projects in Zambia. And this is because our passionate belief in copper for the future. And of course, gold, we're always happy to have gold in association. So now we're a nicely diversified country, diversified copper gold, and we're pursuing what is the current passion, our passion, and always has been. I think it's well known that my passion is copper in association with gold. So we've got a nice balance now, I think, of development and, of course, brownfield exploration, greenfield and brownfield exploration in Zambia.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you announced that on the 11th of February, you know, an exploration agreement there. And now today, you've announced this this one here, the Eureka Copper Gold Project. And you mentioned in there a couple of times that IOCG. Explain that, if you could, Colin, IOCGs.
Well, IOCGs, they call it the Olympic Dam model. It's basically iron-based. It's non-traditional Zambia mineralization status. And it's iron oxide, copper gold. And obviously by iron oxide, there's a big presence of iron. And copper and gold live together in the same bed. Mm-hmm. And it's got the name now, the Olympic Dam model. And there are many academics who say that the Zambian situation, the Zambian IOCGs, are very Olympic Dam similar. So It's a different type of mineralization, which the traditional copper belt industry is built on. It's on the fringes in some cases, and in other cases, it's in Western Zambia, somewhat away from the traditional trend, if you like, for the copper belt, which supported mines which lasted some 100 years or more, you know.
Yeah, it's a well-known area as far as, you know, province as far as mining is concerned. So you're quite bullish on these. So for the cynical person here who's saying, okay, so why haven't these, if they're so good, why haven't these areas been discovered before? What would your answer be there, Colin?
That's a good question. And it's the same worldwide, isn't it? That where you've got a definitive trend, mm-hmm. whereby when one mine might be depleted in 10 years' time, you drill next door and find another one. That's been the Zambian copper belt for tens of years, all through the 90s and still. So that trend is almost finished. You know, I was responsible for finding Kalambila, which essentially was on the same trend, if you like, to the west. And there's been no major discoveries since. And this has drawn people to start looking at the IOCGs. Billiton, I think it was in the 80s, did some tremendous work, really good work, where they did very large-scale mining. And they had holes of 670 metres at 0.46%, something to die for in this day and age, and 200-odd metres over 2%. And then the place was large, the area, the region, if you like, was largely left alone. And then in the 90s, there was some activity from juniors, but the juniors generally just explored underneath very high visible mineralization on surface and were surprised that it didn't go down much further than 60 meters. And of course, what had happened, it had been oxidized out, whereas BHP proved quite conclusively that the breccias, the origin of the mineralization, was somewhat different to the origin of the mineralization that the juniors were chasing. It's very structurally controlled, offset from the main vein structures, and, well, I say generally, in every case that BHP found significant intervals, concealed below surface. So we're going to employ what the standard method of exploration. We'll be doing geochemistry. We'll be doing geophysics, looking for coincident geochemistry and geophysics, and you know that will be X marks the spot, which is not typical Zambian methodology to exploration. So we're going back to which might work. You know, you do in Chile, Latin America. We'll be doing in Zambia, and as I say, the early results by BHP were very, very promising, employing coincident geophysics and coincident geochemistry.
Yeah. So, I mean, before this, of course, your focus was the alluvials there in Mozambique. What's happened there now?
Oh, well, we're still producing and we'll be producing for the next 18 months at least. We've got the Sino Minerals, a single contractor there now. They're producing. We redid our deal with Nexus to 50-50, so we've got a further 10% benefit. And as I say, we're now doing the hard rock. The hard rock is being re-examined, and we're going to produce it. We're going to start a mine which treats the bleach, the leachable material. Should last between 6 and 8 years, which means we'll bring in Dutch Luck, Fairbride, Guy Fawkes, and we'll install a CIL plant. We'll build a small tailings dam, and we'll be in production. Our DFS announced about 35,000. Tons a month, and we're targeting a similar amount. The sulfides we'll check in due course. Mm-hmm. And there are many opportunities for those sulfides, but we're going to concentrate, if you like, on the relatively low hanging fruit, which will be treated by a CIL plant, and we won't go into complex sulfide metallurgy. You're looking at a company now which has got Manica bedded down, and the construction of that plant, the tail end of the plant, because as you know, we've got the Omnia crusher, the Omnia gravity circuit, the Omnia ball mill, and so we're only building the tail end of the plant. Once that plant is fully erected, we basically will be the place of choice for all of the small miners in the vicinity. So apart from our own ore, there'll be numerous opportunities there. So what do you, you know, if you step back and look at us now, you've got an operator who's operating alluvials, which will go into hard rock mining. And at the same time, exploration activities, brownfields and greenfields, with the Matrix deposit and with the Eureka, quite brownfields, because if you know, the announcement shows some quite significant intervals of mineralization from RST and others. And so it's not as, you know, this brownfield site is grades over 2%, gold over half a gram, and intervals of 10, 20 meters. So it really is very exciting. So it's a nicely balanced company, and it really is taking advantage of not everyone. Not everyone shares our belief in the copper boom, but everything I read, everything I see, world trends, convinces me that copper boom is real. And there are basically the discoveries versus the demand are far and few between. Zambia is a main producer. It's producing over 1 million tons now. I think this year it gets to 1 million tons and growing. Zambia is a main producer. And, you know, I'm quoted as, you know, if you're looking for elephants, go looking where elephants have been found before. Mm-hmm. And we're going into this IOCG system, which to me is going to produce a big one. I really do believe it's going to produce a big one.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will be extract.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Colin, in summary, give us three quick reasons why, if someone's not following your story, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're diverse, a combination of production in Mozambique and brownfield, greenfield exploration in Zambia. So that gives us country diversity. And our commodities are gold and copper. So that's diversity again, shared risk. The company is quite cheap relative to its peers and discovery level and asset base. We should be into significant production numbers before year end, or certainly at the early part of next year. So a nice company growing in the right direction.
Marvellous stuff. Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Thank you very much indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're on, Al.
And a very good morning from sunny Seaford, Just. How are you?
I'm all right. Apart from the fact is, you know, every morning I exercise. I run 40 minutes on the treadmill, you know. So I get the first podcast out there at about 6 o'clock. And I get, by the time I get on the treadmill, I'll share that and all the blog stuff. I get on the treadmill, hopefully by 20 past 6, 40 minutes to run, and then I'm off ready for the RNSs, you know. But this morning, this treadmill I've got is on this last leg. I bought it from a mate of mine who didn't use it. But it's a good one. It's almost industrial one, you know, like you see in gyms.
Okay.
But it's been, the mat has been going, and I thought, the mat, to buy a mat, right, it's like $180. And you bought the thing for £300, the actual entire thing. And I'm looking at new ones for £300, so that means I'll buy a new one. But anyway, I was on it today, and the last couple of minutes, what I do is put the incline up and run up a hill, basically, last couple of minutes. And the incline wouldn't go down, so I can't fold the thing up. My office is very small. Now, I can only, you know, get out of the door when I fold the thing up. So it wouldn't go down this morning. So literally, I couldn't get out of my office. I forced the door open, and I literally squeezed through. My face was almost scraping on the door to get through. So, I've had a bit of a wrestle today. You know, I've been fighting with the machine, and the machine has been winning. But, do you know what? I'm a bit worried now, because I've been getting into this exercising, and I'm worried it's not going to work tomorrow morning. I can't get it down and work. So I can't run on a five incline for like 40 minutes. I'll be dead. But...
And of course, we've all seen the video clips of what happens there when the treadmills sort of go AWOL or go berserk. They get higher and higher, faster and faster, and you get spat out one end. So
last summer she go and sort of fit to go on holidays and stuff, lose a bit of weight for the bikini, body, and. And she didn't put that, is an emergency sort of little cord you can attach to your clothes, you know, and it pulls it off and automatically stops the belt going round if you fall off. Well, she didn't put that on. And there's very little room at the end of the belt and the wall, you know, literally, you're talking about a foot, maybe, if that, 2 foot. It's a very tight squeeze. So she's running on it, and she slipped and came off and literally got thrown at the back and got caught between the, you know, the
belt.
And now she's got, it looks like, but she's got sort of still from a year on marks on her knees. It looks like carpet burns.
But, too much information, Jess.
It is from the treadmill, but it's a mat burn, not a carpet burn. Anyway, let's before we get any further into this dubious ground, let's get onto the onto some stocks and shares. What are you looking at? I'm talking about machines, by the way. I'm getting into funds a lot. I'm looking at funds, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be doing a strategy. I mentioned this on my video on the weekend. I mean, literally, last couple of days last week, I woke up in the early hours of the morning with this thought in my head, and one night I got back to sleep, but the second night I didn't. I just get up, get a spreadsheet out, get a chart out, and go through the NASDAQ index from 1988 it went back to, and I looked at every time it got oversold, but to a certain level on the RSI, normally oversold is below 30, but I looked at it at below 23. And I realise if you'd invested every time into a fund, which NASDAQ 100 fund is one of the best funds, performing funds out there, it is the best. It's returned about sort of 400% in the last 10 years. But NASDAQ 100 fund, if you'd only invested in that, for instance, 1988, £1,000, every time it hit 23 or less on the RSI, you'd have put in £18,000 because it only did it 18 times, and it returned you £202,000.
Which is a fantastic return.
Well, so that's 1,048%. So I've now got an alert set using TradingView charts on the NASDAQ, and I will be piling in. I've got a little bit of money in that fund already, but I'm going to be piling it every time. And these are like, last time it happened was in October, actually, but it generally happens once, if that, a year, you know, so average less than once a year. But it does happen, and when there's blood on the streets, that's the time to get in, because this is a fund.
Absolutely, so it's quite.
I mean, it's different with one stock, because if you do that with one stock, there may be something fundamentally wrong with the company, you know, the stock may be going through, you never know. But with a fund where in that fund are the 100 biggest and best tech companies in the US, you're betting on the US economy, essentially, which is a pretty safe bet, you know. So you're looking at getting into it when there's blood on the streets, and the return over time, it's a long-term thing, of course, will be fantastic, you know.
Well, I have been in a fund for the past 18 months that has exposure to that, and it's up 35% already. Yeah. That's the Fidelity Global Technology Fund, and I've got a chunk of my pension in that, and that just stays there. It's okay. So there's fluctuation, but there are times when it dips, and certainly I think longer term you're going to get such a good return from that because NASDAQ is the heart of technology stocks. You know, no matter what anyone says, that's the first port of call, and this fund has a spread of stocks that are across that. So absolutely agree with you there. I think that's a great strategy. I also have exposure to Baillie Gifford, Japanese Smallest Technologies Company Fund, and Baillie Gifford Global Change, and some of the Baillie Gifford funds have performed very well too. Yeah. But I think that's a good point. Use the RSI indicator to take a look at when the funds have come back and have retraced, and it's a great opportunity to get in. Yeah, sure, you pay the management fees and all the rest of it, but it's they're less volatile than stocks, and certainly some of the big funds, you know, Fidelity and Baillie Gifford, as I say, you can't go too far wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, straight away, I mean, for any new investor, and any investor, actually, I think it's a very, you know, you should start with funds because it takes the headache out of investing. You don't have to sort of look at company balance sheets or all this stuff because it's done for you, you know. They're investing in proven companies pretty much. So straight away, with one purchase, you're diversified and that's it. You rather than have to go out and buy 100 different companies, which costs you a lot of money and fees, it's done there in the fund straight away, you know, and like I said, I think it's good to, everyone should have a fund. I did start off with the funds, actually, and as you get more au fait with stocks and shares, you go into individual stocks and shares, because you can get a better return, of course, but you can also lose more, but it's less risky, but yeah, I like it. Let's be honest, tech enables tech. Tech will only become more powerful and more, you know, it's going to be more pervasive in our lives as we go on, isn't it, as life goes on, you know?
It is. It is. Well, when I switched to my SIP in the early noughties and started investing through my SIP, I went into the BlackRock Golden General Fund then, and a couple of years it had doubled in value. It had added 50%. So that fund was a super performer. I also invested into an alliance fund, the Brickstars Fund, which was very disappointing. It's worthwhile noting that even some of the biggest and best funds don't always get it right. But, you know, if you have a good spread of risk and you take the opportunities when the market maybe has retraced, take a view on the 5-year performance and try and get in when it's at a year low, then longer term, you should see a very good return for your money.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what?
No guarantees, of course.
You know, exactly. But it's also not just about what you buy, it's how you buy it. You know, you've got to buy it at the right time.
If you don't buy it at the right time,
you can lose on anything. Like I said, you know, you can buy the best stock in the world, but if you buy it at the wrong time, when it's at a market high, like now, I wouldn't be going big on funds because Nasdaq. Because I think we are towards the end of a cycle, and I think we need a good sell off, you know, to get into there. And that's why I set that strategy to buy it at the right times. Let's talk about individual stocks. What's happening?
Individual stocks. Okay, well, quite a good sort of bridge across from funds. I want to talk about Cadence Minerals. The epicode is KDNC, run, of course, by Chief Exec Kira Mazaria, who's been running the company for some years. Cadence Minerals, we've all heard about the electric vehicle revolution.
Do you know what? BlackRock have just launched electric vehicle fund. Anything to do with electric vehicles, just not only vehicles themselves, but the component parts and people will do, or autonomous vehicles as well, I think, and automation, and they've launched that. It's not available yet with Barclays because it's brand new, but it'll be coming online soon, but that's worth looking at. I tweeted that out. But yes, anyway, go on, go for it.
That's fantastic. No, that's really good. So in fact, Cadence may be one of the companies that that BlackRock looks at in regard to investing. So Cadence, if you're looking at the electric vehicle industry, obviously the supply of lithium for the batteries that power the cars is all important, and there are issues with the grade of lithium that's available too. Cadence are invested in a number of projects around the world. I'll detail the main two, and then I'll discuss the announcement that they made yesterday, which is very very significant in regard to their development. So, firstly, the Sinovate project, which is run by European Metals Holdings. Cadence own 19% of that project. There's a net present value of lithium in the ground there currently of $540 million. The company this is European Metals, have made a number of announcements recently in regard to the drilling that's taking place there and the grades of lithium that are coming back, and there's every indication that the actual total resource available could improve, thereby the net present value when it's reassessed will rise. The company also has a stake in Bacanora Lithium too. Now, I've had a number of tweets about Cadence Minerals saying that the company's been handled dreadfully and it's not performed. But it's important to remember that the stocks that Cadence are invested into have also suffered with the fall in the price of lithium as well. So Cadence is exposed to these companies. It invests when the time is right. It makes strategic investments, and clearly sometimes the timing isn't always right. And probably with Cadence over the past year, they've had that they've suffered as much as the companies owning the mines have as well. So Bacanora Lithium, Cadence now owned just under 5% of the company. Bacanora Lithium, of course, owned the Sonora Lithium project in Mexico. There's a net present value of $1.25 billion there. They also have exposure to the Zinnwald project in Germany, and that's owned through a combination of companies, Megalith and Mexilit. They also have exposure to the San Luis project in Argentina, this was the springboard for the lithium assets announcement the company made yesterday. So what Cadence have done, Cadence owned shares in two companies, Lithium Technology and Lithium Supplies, and they have increased the holding in those companies by issuing further shares. And those two companies between them are going to acquire Synergy Prospecting in Australia, which will in turn owns and will is developing the licenses for three projects, one in Southwest Australia and two in the Northern Territories. Worth noting here that for each project in Australia, the three projects, there are lithium projects adjacent to the land that the company is buying. So, for example, Picasso in Southwest Australia, Alliance Mineral Assets own the Bald Hill Mine, which is adjacent to the Picasso project. A JORC estimate of 26.5 million tonnes there of lithium, and the numbers are even better with the other projects, where you've got at the Alcoota project, where Synergy already owns a strip of land the initial results there show lithium bearing pegmatites of up to 10%. It's a deal that works very well for Cadence, and it's value accretive in that they continue to own the assets that's at San Luis in Argentina. So at a stroke, the company has hugely increased its reach and its ownership of early stage lithium projects. So Cadence is invested into a range of projects which are late stage and early stage. I've already gone through Sinovec, of course, in Czechoslovakia, and the Bacanora project in Mexico. They also have assets in a number of other companies, but the two main ones are Aurop Minerals, which have the Arden Base Metals project in Australia, where they have they recently announced exceptionally high copper grade samples, up to 20% on the Arden Base Metal project, 5% zinc. And also MacArthur Minerals, which is TSXV listed, has also just listed on the OTCQB venture market in the USA. And with the iron ore, the squeeze in the iron ore price following the Vale disaster in Brazil, they are fast developing the Alaring and Moonshine iron ore projects in Australia. So it's a spread of risk with Cadence. They're exposed to lithium. We know the story about lithium. I won't go into too much detail, but the fact that, as you said just now, just BlackRock have launched their own fund is indicative of the huge potential in this sector. And Kira Mazaria has pointed out on a number of occasions that there is going to be a supply squeeze at some point in the next couple of years, simply because the grade of lithium required to produce these batteries doesn't occur everywhere. It's at certain projects, and well over 95% of the projects that can supply lithium around the world don't supply lithium of sufficient quantity or quality. So that's a very important point to note, and I'm sure BlackRock will have taken that into account when putting the fund together. Mm-hmm. So basically, year high 0.28p, year low 0.09p, currently trading at 10p, with a market cap of 8.2 million, with the spread of risk the company has. The directors also have a defined director share purchase scheme where they're buying shares in the company every month, so there's a lot of support from the board as well. And at this juncture, obviously shares can go down as well as up, but given that BlackRock have come into the market at this point, I would say that's probably as good a time as any to move into Cadence shares as well.
Well, do your own research. You know, it's
do your own research. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. How much cash they got?
They've got they're well funded at present, but clearly at some point they may need to sort of raise again. But the point is the way Cadence raised their funds as well is that, for example, they owned nearly 10% of the Bacanora project, and they sold down on that, and the money raised from that is then reinvested into projects like the San Luis project and like the Australian assets projects as well. So So the later stage projects, they can sell off some of those shares and reinvest those into the early stage projects, which is what they've done.
Cool, look at that chart. That is scary. It's gone down, isn't it? So right at the bottom there, bottom right here, and it's had several sort of bounces, but no meaningful recovery, which is a bit worrying. I would wait until it breaches the 200-day moving average, because it hasn't done that. It's in the last, going back since 2017, it's not closed above the 200-day moving average, which is the trend line. Well, most people say the bull bear trend line. Okay.
Well, that's true, but I think if you're looking at a benchmark against which to value the company, the Sinovet project alone, they own just over 90%. That's got a net present value of $540 million. So any one of the major projects, you've got a stake that's worth way in excess of the current market cap of $8.2 million. So I think at some point, the later, for example, Sinovet, the further down the road Sinovet is, in terms of European of electric vehicles, Sinovet in Czechoslovakia is absolutely ideally placed to supply the European vehicle industry. You've got Volvo in Sweden, you've got BMW, Mercedes in Germany, Seat in Spain. That's the European hub that's going to supply these vehicles from here on in. So the further down the road this gets, the closer to production, then again Cadence can sell off, they can realize some of that some of the profits from that and put that into early stage projects. But if you just take any one of those projects alone, the value of the projects is way in excess of the current market cap of Cadence at $8 million. I mean, it stands to reason. However, yes, there has been some uncertainty with the lithium price, but the point you made about BlackRock, I think, is highly significant. They would not come into the market. Firstly, they would time their entry into the market at the right time. So the fact that they've launched this now, to me, is highly significant. And if anything, should go to underscore the lithium price globally. But that remains to be seen.
Yeah. You know, I've also taken a little stake in iShares, which is BlackRock, of course, the ETF, yes. Auto and Robotics, or Automation and Robotics. I think that'll be a nice, a good space to hold into, you know, next 5-10 years, because obviously more things have been automated, and robotics and AI is coming on board. I quite like that sort of tech space, you know.
Sure.
Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay. Well, you spoke about them at the weekend. I had these in mind to speak about last week, but something else came up. The company is Audioboom. Epic Code is Boom, and I think with the events of the past few weeks, no company has more of a claim to the eponymous nature of their Epic Code. You know, we seem to be seeing a boom here, because the share price has absolutely shot through the roof. So Audioboom provides a platform for podcasts, and of course, Audioboom is used for the Vox Markets podcast we're on now. It's also used for our own podcast too, the Brand Communications podcast, and many, many other applications. So you said yourself, podcasting is going mainstream. It really is. And you've got Spotify, musical giant, it's now moving into the area by acquiring Gimlet Media and Anchor FM, spent $343 million. And I think what was really interesting is that Audioboom CEO Rob Proctor said that Audioboom's revenues are quite similar to those of Gimlet Media, which are significant. And obviously, if you're looking to put a valuation against the company, and is this going to be a company that one of the giants might want to acquire further down the road, that looks highly likely given the moves that Spotify are making. And also, if, as is rumored, Netflix are going to get involved in the industry as well, then that again adds further verification and validation for the business model. So Audioboom shares, it's currently got a market cap of 24 million, and it's obviously, we've seen a significant movement, currently trading at just over 2p, been as high as 3.6p, as low as just below a penny. 1.6 million cash at December 31st, and it's just raised another 1.5 million at 1.3p. So the company is very well funded. But the I think what's significant is that at this stage, with that trading update that they recently released, the company's already exceeded the total revenues for the 30 months of December 2018. Revenues already on this year are up 92% to the 21st of January, just under $12 million, which is a huge jump. And also the revenue per 1,000 downloads has risen from $10 per 1,000 downloads to nearly $26 per 1,000 downloads. Again, that's highly significant, and that's very much at the upper end of this emerging industry's data at present. But this is a real growth area, as we know. Obviously, the movement post-funding and on the back of the revenue growth is highly significant. As an investor, would you jump in now? You might want to wait a while and see how the share price consolidates from now. But given the rate of growth in the industry and the fact that the big boys are moving in and making these acquisitions, this is a story that could just run and run. But clearly, you know, I think a year ago, Audio Boom were struggling in a number of ways, and I think they tried to raise money and they were very.
They tried to take over, didn't they? It was a reverse takeover. Of a bigger company called Triton, which messed up a lot, and
that was it. Yeah, reverse takeover. Yeah,
and they'd spent all the time on that, and it messed up the sales, everything. But they're back on track here. In fact, more than back on track. But like I said, that figure they've done, you know, revenue in the first 8 weeks of 2019, it exceeds the 11.7 million of 2018. Mm. I don't expect that to happen every 8 weeks, because they said now they've filled up 80% of their ad inventory, but they are bringing on new podcast hosts, which will increase the ad inventory, and those people they are sort of bringing on, they're paying for. So they're coming with their own audience, basically, so they can sell out that inventory quite easily. Like I said, the share price, it's risen quickly. It went from sort of almost a penny a few months back up to, 2.4 pence. It's going to come out. I put an alert here, because I own some anyway. But I put an alert at 1.75. I think it may even come back and consolidate that, and then may take another leg higher, but that's where I think it'll come back to. But I always put alerts on companies like that and let them come out and cool off. And then I'll consider then if I top up more. But let it cool down a bit. Anything else, Al?
Yes, indeed. Just to say that Audio Boom is like these emerging industries such as Bedstack that we've spoken about over the past few weeks, and developing the in broadcaster or the in read advertising bookings. You know, this really is early stage technology, and I think the growth potential in podcasting is absolutely huge. Enough of that. Finally, Europa Metals, the former Ferrum Crescent Holdings, EUZ. Yeah. Clearly, this is we're back to another mining stock. Now, this is a company that owns a lead and zinc project in northern Spain. It's called Torrel. Obviously, Spain's a very benign environment for mining, as we know. But this is a long established region. It's got great roads and rail access. Also, good power there. The company was listed on ASX as well as AIM. It delisted from there. There was an issue with the inferred resource numbers that the company had reported. Had to reduce them by 3 million tonnes. And the shares that were trading at 0.15p plummeted like a stone and are currently sitting just above year lows at 0.035p, which gives a market cap of just under 2 million. So the Torrel project, there's a 60 million tonne inferred resource there, 7.5% zinc, 3.1% lead, and 24 grams per ton of silver. The potential size of that asset, zinc alone, it's over $2 billion worth of zinc, $1 billion worth of lead, and $200 million worth of silver. And they've also discovered copper there, which hadn't been found in the region before. And that was there's no reading on the amount of copper in there yet, but the fact it's there is obviously very encouraging. So this is a world-class asset, and also adjacent to the Toril asset, there are what we refer to as zones of influence, where it's it is likely that if the company applied to expand the existing license into areas adjacent to, those would be looked on favourably. But clearly, that's a process that we'd have to go through yet, so there's no point in speculating on that. It is also, I think, if you look at other companies in this area that own these sort of assets, they are trading on and have valuations many, many times higher than that of EUZ. So whilst this company is very early stage, there's an awful lot of work to be done this year, but the company has set out its stall for this year. The scoping study obviously will be completed, and infill drilling, early stage drilling, has already been completed, the objective being to convert this to a JORC resource estimate. So we've got a firm resource estimate, after which you can move to feasibility study. Management: Lawrence Reed, very experienced their CEO, and Colin Bird and Miles Campion involved with the company as well. As we've said before, that there are issues with funding for any small mining company, but the company is funded for now. It will require funding further down the road, no doubt. But given where this asset is, given that the benign environment it's operating in, if we can get to JORC, if we can get a JORC estimate from the region sooner rather than later, then I think we could see a major re-rating for the stock. But again, it is highly speculative. So do your own research.
Yeah, and the momentum was, you know, taken out of this. It's like a punch to the belly, really. When ASX, they went to the scoping study numbers, and they released them. They couldn't release the numbers. There's no numbers in the scoping study. So and then that sort of big sell off. But now they're coming off the ASX. They'll be able to release those figures, hopefully, and get a bit more momentum back in the stock and get some funding, and then carry on to keep progressing. But it's a good project and in a good region. £2 million it's valued at the moment. I mean, it's completely oversold, and I think the worry over funding is overdone. But the trouble is, the funding is linked to the share price. So so that's the worry.
That's the thing. That is the issue, but I think again there are many mining projects out there. But if you're looking to tick all the boxes, the assets in the ground, you've got a great region, a very benign region, great road and rail links, and a project that could be progressed pretty quickly. Once we get the JORC estimate resolved, and we move to feasibility, and away we go.
Marvellous stuff, Al, thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella, all right?
Good luck with the treadmill.
Yeah, good luck getting out of my office, yeah. Maybe just surviving this time next week, just on the missus passing drinks through the door, you know? So, cheers, Al.
Cheers, Jess.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Metrobank, M-T-R-U-O, Metrobank. I've had a little dabble of those. Not a lot, just a little dabble. I'm hoping the current woes is priced in, hopefully, and in the next couple of years they'll go back to becoming a multi-billion pound bank, as opposed to a sub £1 billion bank where they are at the moment. Growth figure's quite good, but there's lots of issues at the moment. They underpriced some risk assets, the mortgage assets, and they're raising some money. So there's a lot of worry about them at the moment, but I'm going to hold on and see what happens. At four on the podcast, is it Crosswood Cybersecurity? I like their theme there, I like what they're doing. They're on my watch list. That's CCS. At three, Horizonte Minerals. The big RNS came out today, actually. In fact, it's probably in the top five most liked. I'll talk about that then. Proactus Holdings at two, PhD. And number one most followed company again is Red Emperor Resources, RMP. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Thor. And that's Strategic Development Australian Copper Interests. At three, Iron Ridge Resources, exploration update in Ghana lithium portfolio. At two, Director Share Purchase, as Vast Resources. At one, Rock Rose Energy, possible offer for independent oil and gas. And at number one, it's Horizonte, it's just holdings company, but it's City Financial, a sort of investment house that went bust, pretty much. And that's what explains the downward pressure on many companies' share prices of late, because they've been selling out the administrators, or they have. But yeah, huge downward pressure. But now that's gone, so they've cleared out of that. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.